district member a minute ago, so I think we have both a quorum and representation. And before we get started, let me call on Mr. Doherty for our safety advice.
Thank you. Just in the event the fire alarm goes off, would ask folks to either exit via the exit doors or out through the lobby and gather in front of the building museum across the street so that we can make sure everyone has been able to evacuate the building in a safe manner. As far as the safety contact, I actually was going to talk about home fires, but now with all of the attention on the hot weather that we are experiencing, and we've mentioned before, there's certainly a grave concern for everyone that they make sure that they stay hydrated, try and stay in a place where they do not suffer from heat exhaustion or heat stroke, and consume lots of water, and just make sure that that they do their best. I know even on the news that it mentioned today, you know, shopping malls, anywhere that you can go to stay in an air-conditioned facility, try and minimize the time out in the sun, out in the weather, and would like to also just promote that reminder throughout as we're expecting temperatures in excess of 100 degrees tomorrow and then throughout the weekend. So just wanted to make that reminder.
Great. Thank you. Are there any questions, comments on the agenda? Not... I motion to approve the agenda.
Second.
Without objection, agenda is approved. We have minutes from the meeting of June 23rd. I have a motion to approve the minutes.
So moved.
Any comments, questions, amendments to the minutes? Hearing none, all in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Okay, thank you. For this morning's session, and I would hope, given all our business today, we'll hold it to an hour. I asked Mr. Doherty to brief us on a couple of important classes of safety recommendations that we are working on. He's going to focus on those that have come from the National Transportation Safety Board. And those are important because the board doesn't come in unless it has been a very serious accident or incident, usually involving loss of life or injury. So whatever they have recommended, whether it's a more serious risk or a lower one, we want to be sure we're paying attention to, because it's the combination of all the things that go wrong that cause those kinds of incidents. I also asked for a quick update on all of the open recommendations that relate, that would fall into what we spoke of a month or so ago as class one, being those things that have the potentially most serious impact. So thought we would focus on how we are doing, and the answer is we're doing pretty well at dealing with those. With that, let me turn it over to Mr. Doherty.
Thank you, and good morning, Chairman Downey, members of the board. It is again my pleasure to be able to address the Board Safety and Security Committee on the ongoing progress that the authority is accomplishing. And as Mr. Downey has noted, considerable progress and effort is being made to address and ultimately close out existing and old dated recommendations, as well as address any new findings that come up. Because as Mr. Bassett has even stressed in his presentation, to get to zero is very difficult when it comes to recommendations, if not impossible, because if we're doing what we're supposed to be doing and auditing ourselves, we will find other items that need to be corrected, and we will work in that vein to maintain the safest system. My primary spotlight, also as Mr. Downey had mentioned this month, is on the National Transportation Safety Board's recommendations, as well as the monthly safety indicators for May of 2011. I want to provide you a little bit of the background on the NTSB and their authority, basically. And as you can see, the NTSB is an independent investigative agency that was established in 1967, and it's with its overarching mission to promote transportation safety. And then what we will continue to discuss throughout the recommendation throughout the report are the 27 open recommendations that WMATA has from the NTSB.
Could I correct one item on the slide? The NTSB was at one time inside the Department of Transportation. It was let out in the early 70s. It is a fully independent agency, presidential appointees, and has no mission other than safety.
Thank you. Over the lifetime of WMATA, there have been specific recommendations made to WMATA, or more general recommendations that are actually made by the NTSB to all transit properties throughout the country. Currently, as I've mentioned, we have 27 open and acceptable recommendations to WMATA. In other words, when we provide a response, the NTSB determines if it's an acceptable response or an unacceptable response. Currently, with the 27 that we do have, as of the printing of this report, 41% of our recommendations, or 11, had been submitted to the NTSB for consideration for closure. However, just this past Monday, we've submitted 3 more packets requesting the NTSB consider closure of an additional 3 of their recommendations, meaning that we will actually be requesting, or we are requesting closure of 14 of the 27, or just about 51% of the recommendations made by the NTSB, and many of the other ones that are being carried are long-term, as we've talked about in the past. But as discussed in previous meetings, all hazards are now processed through hazard analysis and are classified as to their severity and frequency in accordance with the military standard, or what's known as MIL Standard 882C. If you remember the color-coded matrix that was displayed with the red, yellow, blue, and white, then 8 of the 27 NTSB recommendations are classified by WMATA, not by the NTSB because they don't classify hazards, as unacceptable or Category 1. 2 of the 11 that were submitted that are Category 1, we've just requested closure. I would also like to note that this report doesn't include the one recommendation to the WMATA Board of Directors, because the Board of Directors responded and that recommendation has been closed, which dealt with revising the mission statement, the vision statement of the Board to actually include stronger safety language. As we move through the presentation, you'll see 8 of the recommendations that I've mentioned that are classified unacceptable marked by number 1, you know, next to that recommendation, or if there's an asterisk next to it, it's a recommendation that has been submitted to the NTSB, or if there's a letter P, it indicates that it is in progress.
Could I just clarify? Category 1 is the unacceptable condition. It's not that the safety board has said our response is unacceptable.
Correct.
They said we have undertaken an acceptable response towards ultimately dealing with that. But it is a condition we definitely need to remedy.
Right. And it's what we are doing, what WMATA is doing as part of our hazard management process. So, and that's when the NTSB rates, you know, not rates, when they actually accept it by our response to their recommendation. And that's they'll put open acceptable or unacceptable response. Currently, all of ours now are acceptable response by the NTSB, indicating that they are satisfied with the progress and the activity and what we have reported back to them. As we go through the presentation, we'll start with those recommendations prior to the tragic Fort Totten incident. And as I mentioned, again, just remember that those marked with the asterisks have been submitted for closure. We can show that WMATA has one recommendation remaining from the 2006 Woodley Park incident that dealt with the rollback protection. The rollback protection has been installed on the 1000 series cars, and the design for the 4000 series is, I believe, complete at this point and will be the rollback protection added to the 4000 series cars in the next couple months. And then we would hope that the NTSB would consider closing this recommendation. We have 5 open recommendations from the 2007 Mount Vernon incident. As you can see, the new QA process, proper wheel truing, new car procurement, configuration management, a single point of responsibility with the engineering group, car engineering, investigations, new written procedures, rail point face lubrication, and replacing the number 8 turnouts, which is one of that's an activity that's going on in many of these shutdowns, and we've targeted completing that by June 2012, and as of today, 81% of those have been changed out.
And the first 4, which have the asterisk, are those that we have now submitted for closure.
4 of those have been committed for closure, yes, sir. And we realize with the number 8 turnouts that that's still just about a year away.
But there is a plan for getting it all done as part of rebuilding the system.
Kubitschek's group is working feverishly to get those changed out. The one recommendation regarding review and update that WMATA was for the Metro Rail Safety Rulebook, and the two open recommendations that were sent to all transit properties, I'd mentioned if the NTSB sends out basically a general recommendation, and that dealt with, those two dealt with sleep disorders, those were just submitted this past Monday for consideration by the NTSB for closure with our action. And as you can see from them, we do have the systematic approach for the audit checks that we're requesting closure, and well, and we needed, because the report was published, the top one there now has been submitted for closure with the MSRPH, and so we are certainly making progress there also. We have two open recommendations that are sent, as I'd mentioned, all transit properties. We had those in progress. We believe we have taken the necessary steps in which we've requested that those two are closed out by the NTSB also.
And they deal with the fatigue issue, at least with respect
fatigue,
to operators.
And they actually wanted specific questioning for applicants in the process, just to see if they, to determine if they do have a sleep order, to make sure that when you hire folks, that they have the proper treatment prior to deploying them and employment or transporting customers. The NTSB issued two recommendations prior to the completion of their investigative report, and then the 13 additional recommendations for resulting from the Fort Totten accident, and several of the recommendations have been submitted for closure, as noted by the asterisks, and several that were classified. These were also in the classified category one. So as you can see, even from here, in this, we have two of those that are submitted for closure right now, and the other ones that that we do have in progress and that we are working on, they just take a longer period of time to complete.
You could hold that up for a minute. I just want to, for the benefit of the members of the committee, focus on the last two items on automatic train control. This is a big deal. They are asking, and we are in the process of analyzing the control system to determine whether we believe it really is capable of doing its job. And then secondly, if there are any issues raised by that, begin to develop alternative means to assure its safety. So at some point, we probably want to talk more specifically about those, but that's potentially a very big deal.
Thank you. Continuing with the Fort Totten recommendations, these are the remainder of the NTSB recommendations that resulted, you know, from the Fort Totten accident. As you can see, many of them are in progress, as well as some have been submitted for closure in this also. So we are planning moving forward to getting these closed out. We just need additional time to make it happen. And if there were any questions on the NTSB.
On the safety board, several of us will be seeing the chair of the safety board in the next few days, and I thought it would be useful to be able to speak as to what we're doing with their recommendations. Marcel.
Yeah, I had a quick question. And when will the ATC analysis be completed?
I'll ask Mr. Kubitschek.
We've completed our first initial analysis. We're probably another 6 months to a year away, depending on our findings and stuff. Right now, part of this process is, you know, we've got a lot of these recommendations that we're starting to implement. So it was one, the first phase was basically to analyze everything conditionally as is. Then we started integrating some of these other changes and upgrades and stuff. And so what we're doing is we're going back and analyzing those changes and modifications and stuff as we move forward. So as Mr. Downey noted, it's a very complex, very detailed process. And so that's the status of what we're doing. But positive things are coming out of this. I can state that.
You.
We've got a few consultants and stuff that are on board that are doing this in conjunction with our staff and the firms that we've selected. Also have international experience as well in train control.
Who are they?
We've got Hatch Mott, McDonald, and we also have Parsons supporting this as well, and a few others.
And when this develops to the point that you're comfortable with it, I think it would be useful to have a briefing. I don't want to turn us into signal engineers, but this kind of thing is what should keep you awake at night. Are you really comfortable that we're able to say to our passengers, the signal system, the control system, will get you home safely.
It's also key to...
It's key to good operations.
...the decision about putting the system in ATC.
Restoring the train, automatic train management. Okay?
If there's no other questions on that, then we move into the safety part of the report, if we could. Our first key performance indicator is the employee injury rate, as we talk about, per 200,000 hours. Our year-to-date trend is positive compared to the same period last year. In May, we had 41 injuries for a rate of 4.95 injuries per 100 employees working a normal year, while April, we had 44 injuries for a rate of 4.44. Even though the employee injuries went down by 3, our rate went up because we had fewer employee hours. For calendar year 2011, we are currently at 229 injuries for a rate of 5.11. Strains continue to be our number one injury cause. Struck by replaced slips and falls is the second leading cause, with injuries due to collisions coming in third. We will continue to educate and inform our employees on the proper techniques to avoid strains, as well as being aware of their surroundings at all times. If I could even note, in May of 2011, we had 15 injuries from straining, 9 from striking something or being struck by, 6 from collisions, 3 from slips and falls, 2 that were caught by something, 1 that was an insect bite, 1 that an employee sustained a cut, we had 1 eye injury, and then 3 miscellaneous other injuries.
Mr. Downing?
Yes.
Mr. Dory, struck by a vehicle, struck by what?
It can, you know, basically from anything that, if somebody, how do I, you know, I'm looking struck by, you know, that can be from struck by, not a vehicle, in other words, not being hit in the yard, no, that's okay. Typically not from that, but they're struck by something, an object along that line.
Something falls on, off
that's
the
struck by, something falling, a part, a component like that.
Okay, that's helpful, because in our context, I was thinking vehicles.
Yeah, we got, haven't seen employee injuries where they've been struck by a vehicle. Our second key performance indicator is the customer injuries per million passenger trips. This includes all customers, whether bus, metro access, or rail, including passengers on board our equipment, in our transit facilities, and using escalators and elevators. For May, we had 50 customer injuries for a rate of 1.69 injuries per million passenger trips. So not quite 2 per million at that rate. April's numbers were 67 customer injuries for a rate of 2.21. Compared with April, we had 17 fewer injuries in May. We had fewer injuries in our rail transit facilities, including escalators, and there were fewer injuries for bus and metro access passengers as well. For calendar year 2011, we have had 281 customer injuries for a rate of 1.97 per million passenger trips. We're continuing to focus our rail customers' attention to using care while in the metro system. More public service announcements are on the way regarding safety, as we have had very positive feedback from them in the past. We continue to monitor and coach our bus operators through use of drive cam as well as other observations in an effort to change poor driving habits while also reinforcing good habits. If I can move into the status on our corrective action plans, if there's no questions on that. As you can see from this slide, this is an updated graph reflecting the number of open caps, with only 16 remaining out of the 256 corrective actions that were prior to the 2010 TOC triennial audit. And so we have a new group that we're looking at for that. But in addition to the 91 2010 caps that have been closed, we've submitted an additional 48 caps to TOC for consideration of closure. And then on top of that, though, we have added 36 new caps through our own internal auditing process. So I believe you can see we are making significant progress in closing out corrective actions. However, we do add new ones as we find them or identify them.
And as you said before, zero would be a goal, but it never will likely be achieved if we're doing the job of seeing what's going on and how we could get better.
Yeah, thank you. Question on the 2010 new. Clearly, a lot of these identified deficiencies are minor in nature, I would think.
Yes, sir.
And the real question I have is, do we also categorize those in the various categories, category 1, 2, 3, 4, and out of curiosity, out of the remaining 226, how many are in the various categories?
Yes, sir. Actually, that slide coming up,
oh, okay.
We have 28 that are open and unacceptable. Right. That would be on the slide after the next slide.
So 28 of the of all of them. Of
28 of all of them fall in the unacceptable category.
Out of the 226, how many of those were the Category 1? How many additional Category 1 did we identify?
There are 10 that are still open.
Let me see if I...
I mean, of the new ones.
I'm not sure. I will have to get back with you with that.
I'm interested to see whether we're picking up major deficiencies during our the variety of inspections that we're doing. And
I honestly believe that none were added to the Category 1, but I want to verify that for you.
Mr. Dunn?
Yes.
You know, we have this question every time we have this report, and I'm just wondering if there isn't a way in that 226 bar to break it up into Category 1, Category 2, so that that question could be immediately apparent as one looks at the chart.
Yeah, we could red, yellow, green, white, those.
Hash marks and X's and things along that line to try and...
Yeah, I mean, we ask the question every time. I think it's actually really important information for the public that, the vast majority of these are not in the high-risk categories.
The guidance and policy that we have set is deal with the important hazards first.
Exactly.
So that would be a test.
Yeah, and then that lets us ask those focused questions about how are we addressing those. Good. Thanks.
Correct. And we'll provide that here. And we also just, do provide that even as a copy of our monthly report so that you'll have even the tremendous detail, I guess, going, but we'll try and summarize that on that bar.
Yeah, if you really want to get to sleep early, there's about a 50-page report in extremely fine type that gives you more than you want to know about each and every one of these. But,
well, I think, Mr. Dunn, I think part of our challenge, and we keep kind of talking about this, is that we're trying to get to a set of dependable documents that answer the board's key questions. And it's an iterative process for us to figure out what those things are that collectively we think are the most important for you to pull up.
Yeah.
And it does kind of take a couple times through to say. So I don't want to read the 15-page report.
A couple of slides forward is an attempt at that. It's sort of the things that should hit us in the middle of the forehead. Yeah. Struck by.
We'll see what we can do to revise this one also. So we'll do that. Again, this slide actually depicts the new corrective actions. My page isn't turning. As you've seen last month, this is a new cap, and it's a breakdown of where the corrective actions come from. As you can typically see, the majority, if you look at the internal safety audits, the inspector generals, our own internal investigations, certainly the majority of the corrective actions now actually are being added through our own processes. So we are continuing to do that, and that in that vein, to try and give you that breakdown there, what are the new open, the new closed, where they're at. And the last one, actually, we were just trying, this one, as I've mentioned, the 28 recommendations that WMATA is classified as unacceptable according to the MIL standard. This chart reflects the makeup of the 28. For example, here are 8 of the 27 NTSB recommendations that we've discussed. The others, as I've mentioned, come from the top triennial WMATA Internal Safety Audits, Office of Inspector General. So this one, we actually just gave you the pie chart of the open and unacceptable of now the 317. And this assists us in prioritizing.
We'll continue to show this and hopefully see a smaller number each time. This is one where conceivably we could get to zero.
Yes, that's what we're, but some could be also that require the most time and accomplishing.
Mr. Downey,
yes. Sorry.
Just another clarification, because I think this is right, so I want to. Open and unacceptable hazard that has an accepted...
They have an accepted...
Remediation plan.
Yes, right. Yeah. It is an unacceptable condition that we are seeking and have a plan to remediate.
Right.
We, you know, we're replacing 1,000 rail cars, and that one will hang in there until we get our new...
It'll be open as an unacceptable condition for a very long time, but we
hope... But we have a plan.
The plan is in the execution stage.
We're making acceptable progress moving forward to close.
And if we were to slip on progress on any of these, we would hear from the safety board or talk that what you're supposed to be doing, you're not doing.
And to give an example of that, a year ago on a replacement of number eight turnouts, that was unacceptable to the NTSB in terms of our schedule. So we sat down with them, Dave and his crew, and laid out a schedule, which put that as number one priority, basically, and that became an acceptable response. That's an example.
Mr. Downey?
Yes.
Thank you, and thank you for acknowledging me, and I want to say hello to all of the committee members and the board later in the afternoon. But my question relates to the time frame for the unacceptable hazards. So I'm gathering that all 28 are on different schedules, and those schedules range from a month to a year to what is the time frame to address the 28?
Some can be a month. Some of them are years in the future. I guess the example of that is the receipt of the 1,000 series rail cars. The 7,000 to replace the 1,000. That we know that's an extended time period, as Mr. Sarles just mentioned.
Is that the longest point, the longest scheduled improvement?
Well, I won't agree with that. The signal system one might turn out to be the longest.
That's the longest. Okay.
Yeah, I would support that. I think the replacement of the 1,000 series, you know, we're buying other rail cars for Dulles and everything else, so you're probably looking at another 6 or 7 years. But we have a remediation plan where we're bellying the cars and we're taking the appropriate steps. But the train control one is the one, as we go through this investigation and stuff, that probably on my part is the greatest concern at this stage because of the unknowns and the analysis that's still to be undertaken.
So will it be an unacceptable hazard until the total replacement of those cars? That will remain an unacceptable hazard. Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
Our next step for this is certainly, to continue to provide the board an update of where we're at. This would conclude, our formal presentation at this time, and any other questions from the board.
Mr. Downs.
I think we went by it too fast, or at least too fast for me. On your data side, under bus collision rates, it's the blue sheet, unnumbered. Following 26, I think. 25? Okay. Following 25. It is 26. It's just unnumbered. The bad trend is not that we've had some increases in non-preventable accidents. For all but 1 month of this fiscal year, preventable bus collisions are up. Is there a root cause analysis about what is going on with this trend and what's at risk here?
We are, as with the stats themselves, we've mentioned the board previously when we introduced, the stats are changing because of our new SMS system, our new safety measurement system, so we have accurate data, and that's why the change was that system went live in July, so we're comparing that. I want to make that correlation first, but what we're looking at, the root cause, and that Mr. Rickwa's group, the drive cam adds to the, the verification, the validation of the events that occur, as well as we also are moving to follow the National Safety Council standard for determining accident preventability. And a lot of that is in that determination to where we actually have better information to make better judgments and to determine whether or not it's preventable or non-preventable. And if Jack's here, if he wants to add to that, he certainly.
Yeah, Mr. Rico.
Welcome to.
Good morning. I think Mr. Doherty's comments are true. I think we've just got that much more information. We've done extensive training of our supervisors for investigation purposes. The drive cam gives us a visual and verbal report as to what happened as a part of an incident or an accident. Generally, our preventable accidents are about 35% to 40% of the total. And I just think that, you know, we're trying to be as accurate as possible, and as, with the more information that's provided, I think we're very strict as to our operators as to our determination of preventability, and
the drive cam is a level of evidence that we didn't have before.
Right, and that went into effect right around the, we had all the systems installed October of last year, and I think that is probably the principal reason why the preventables have gone up slightly.
In other words, there's a sharper distinction now about the definition of non-preventables and the enforcement of it?
I think the investigation allows us to make a better determination as to who may have been at fault, and I think we're finding as a result of the information that with the professional operator, we anticipate that they'll do everything they can to avoid it, and I think the drive cam is helping us determine and help us correct processes to where the operator could have avoided an accident.
I mean, the drive cam is intended not to be necessarily a disciplinary measure, but really an ability to retrain and prevent.
And as Mr. Downey mentioned, Doherty mentioned, you know, it's a great training tool. So if they are determined to be at fault, we certainly can show them what they did wrong and try to get it corrected.
Thank you.
Yes. A question on page 29 in the appendix is the smoke and fire incidents. Again, you know, kind of a real peak in smoke incidents in May of 2011. And I was wondering if we knew what caused that and what generally is causing. Is it the same thing over and over and over again? Because I know we've had briefings in the past about trash getting down into the track system, and we've bought new technology to try to help with that. What is the root cause of the smoke incidents and the reason for the increase in May?
Okay, the spike on this one right in here is we've just got a lot of bad wood ties out there on the railroad. And we've got areas where, for example, whenever the substations and stuff were upgraded, you know, we added capacity for returns and everything else across the board. But a lot of that, the ties and stuff were not replaced in that respective area. So we are actively replacing ties in huge segments. We have ties out there that are still original, 35 years old, that you literally can, you know, you can take them apart by hand. And this is probably one of the number one things, even from a standpoint whenever we have customers, and this is primarily at above grade, where we'll have individuals that will be smoking on the platform. They'll throw their cigarette butt and stuff down into the right-of-way, and all of a sudden, you know, you wait a few hours or whatever, and all of a sudden you get something else that's starting to smoke. The other component that we've been working on is on the stud bolts and the insulators, where we have targeted working around the stations, and a lot of that is on the red line, on the A side, or I should say for instance, from Twin Brook all the way down into the core Metro Center. We've got a campaign where we're going through and we're replacing areas of the stud bolts and the materials in a concentrated effort where we know where the maximum load is at. And so those results are also trending very positive on that right there. And the other thing I could add is that we're also working together with emergency management and safety and also within maintenance. We really want to have one report, one source of information, because we put information into our maintenance management system, but there might be another department that pulls information from another area. And on our part, we want to be able to use this information to really start trending this stuff the way that it really should be done.
So it's and that information is shared with the safety department?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they have access to maximum. We're just trying to make sure that from our perspective, as we pull, because we've got a reliability group and stuff that's working on this, that, you know, we understand what's, you know, what's being called and what's out there. So that way, all of the departments are referencing off of the same exact document.
So it's just, I just want to make sure I understand. Some of these incidents are caused by faulty equipment, and some of them are caused by passenger behavior.
Yes. I mean, we'll have it where you'll have somebody out there smoking, and like I said, they'll flip it out in there, and and that is called in. That's the other thing here, is that we might be a little bit over the top on what we classify as smoke, you know, and flame. But when it gets into the safety and the recognition of what's taking place, you know, those are things that we have to address. And I'll just to add another issue is, or another item is, for example, like in the platform area, you know, we've also started talking about what we can do to put some type of cover or some type of device or whatever, so that a way, you know, we can help eliminate or reduce some of these, you know, potential incidents and stuff. But when you start doing that, there's a pro and con. You know, every time you do one thing, then you might create two other issues, you know, with that.
I think just as a quick follow-up, as we talk about eating and drinking and other things in the system, newspapers, et cetera, we might want to incorporate in our reaching out to our customers that, you know, yeah, no eating and drinking, and, you know, trash can cause fires in the system. Yeah. Seems pretty obvious, but I know way back, this is a big improvement. I can remember years ago when, you know, trash was a major cause of some of these incidents, and it never hurts to remind passengers that there are consequences to throwing trash in the system. And it might just be something we want to add, you know, to our list of things when we put together brochures and different things for passengers, that could be a consequence.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Question? Thank you. Question, and I apologize if you answered it during the presentation. I've got a case of the lates this week. But this relates to the bus passenger injury rate, and I know that year over year, we're down, if I understood that slide accurately. But actually, the last three reportable months, if I look at the table, are actually up for each of the last three reportable months over the prior year. Can you speak to that? Is that a significant anomaly? Are we? It looks like while we're down, we're actually moving up in terms of reportable injuries. Do I misinterpret that data? The page is actually, it's the blue page,
23,
that follows. The data table is page 31, and it shows March, April, and May, the last three reportable months are actually up over each of the prior months in 2010.
May of 2011, nine collisions contributed to the injury rate, you know, at a rate of 2.01 bus passenger injuries per million trips.
Right.
And of those injuries, 11 were collision-related, and 11 were related to non-collision events, which could be slips, trips, and falls, things along that line. So it's, you know, one of the things that we continue, you know, to look at in our...
Well, I guess what sticks out to me, again, unless I'm misinterpreting the data, is that while we're down on the year over year, the trend is actually up month to month. Is that right?
Yeah, were we to continue with the rate of the last 3 months, we'll...
Very marginal.
Well, it's compared, you know, what it gets to compare to the number of injuries per accident, whenever we have, where some of our accidents, when we have it for our customers, we may have, you know, one claimed injury, others we have four claimed injuries, eight claimed injuries. We are finding more individuals are claiming injury as a result of the accident, and then we look at the verification of those injuries as going forward. It's not, I understand what you say, you know, the appearance is looking that, you know, that there is, you know, somewhat of an incline. However, the injuries are based on the number of injuries claimed. We're finding more individuals are claiming injury as a result of an accident. And that's why we have the, you know, the different lines on there to assist with that.
I understand. Are you saying this is verified injuries on the chart we're looking at here?
No, so this is claimed injuries.
On the data table are actually claimed injuries that are not verified yet? Is that right?
No, they're all claimed injuries.
Yep. Jim, can I add?
Yeah.
I think what we're seeing is that we're seeing a decline in the number of collisions that the buses are having, but we're seeing an increase in the number of incidents on the buses, either as a result of a collision or as a result of quick stopping or slips and falls, to where passengers are claiming an injury and being transported to a hospital. One possibility, in the positive side, ridership is up 20 to 30,000 per average weekday recently. Over the last few months, we're seeing a ridership increase, so there's more opportunities for something to happen. I think Mr. Doherty indicates, you know, we might have a minor injury, but, you know, six or seven people may claim an injury, and that's what gets recorded. Again, through our training and efforts that we make, we're trying to get the operators to, you know, drive as smoothly as possible.
Right.
We have people coming back up out of their seats to reload their smart trip card while the bus is in operation, which is
beginning
to become more and more activity, more and more of a concern of people walking around the bus. You know, we're trying to find ways. Traffic is congested. People are cutting buses off. You know, we're trying to do everything we can to try to keep the ride as smooth as possible. So
well,
that.
I appreciate that.
We are seeing a decrease in, as you said, we're seeing a decrease in the number of claims overall, but it's not dropping as fast as the number of collisions are. So we're, you know, we're trying to address every way possible that we can to try to keep people in their seats, try to keep the ride as smooth as possible, because it's usually a slip or fall, somebody tripping on a step going in or out of the bus or whatever.
I understand the points you're making, and I don't challenge the data. What I'm trying to understand and reconcile is whether we are seeing an increase in the rate of injury or a decrease. And the two tables conflict for me. The month over month says that for the past 3 months we're seeing an increase in the rate of injury for each of the last 3 months. The chart that we're seeing here shows that on an annualized basis we are incurring injuries at a lesser rate. And I'm just trying to get your sense of whether we are on an annual basis trending more safely or whether we are on an annual basis starting to trend up. I'm just trying to get a lens on the data, and maybe it's too short a period of time to draw that kind of conclusion, but I just want to understand what I'm seeing.
I think you're right. On an annual basis, we're trending down. On the recent months, we're trending up. And so
we want to watch
we
that.
Want
so
to,
that's
yes.
what I would like to zero in.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Charles, do you have?
I just want to go back to Jeff's question earlier, and I looked at the specific data for May to sort of sort out half the incidents were cross ties, which could be due to the flip. There was very little due to debris, which probably represents the efforts that were underway with the new vacuum trucks that were put.
Yeah.
You can look at these numbers, and when you look at them on a monthly basis, they could trend higher or lower, and that raises a lot of questions by the board. But I've raised this issue before, and what I'd like to see, certainly I would urge the chair to encourage this, some benchmarking when we look at the other systems in the country and where are we in relation to setting either our own benchmarks to kind of monitor the rates. Because, you know, if I could see a line across there which says, well, on an average we should be below a certain number, say it's 5. You know, then that would give me a little more sense of where we are from a national and our own internal benchmarking purposes. So I would encourage the next step on this type of chart would be to establish some sort of benchmarking, not just on the smoke incidents. That would be hard, but I'm thinking about passenger injury rates.
And so I
would encourage that and also them to be adjusted because, you know, benchmarking is an adjustment process as well.
Yes. We can put the cards on us, you know, reason for that. Not going
to. Here's one other point. I think Mr. Nichols raises a series of good questions. I think the real issue here is what constitutes a real trend versus a series of incidences where, you know, it could have been random, it could have been a number of different causes. And I think what we need to do is really once we benchmark, you know, and look at a period of time and compare it to another period of time to give it enough time, essentially, to see if there's a real problem or not. I think we were reacting to a lot of month-to-month problems, which might have been a creation of several different factors. But if in an oversight role, I think the issue is really, is there an observable trend that needs to be addressed? And we should just look at the graphs and try to guess at that. I think that's the hard thing to do. So maybe something that Mr. Doherty or Ms. Bernstein could help us deal with as we look at these graphs, I think, or else I think we're just going to hit on specific issues without really looking at what the root problem is.
And we are starting to look at that now because we now have much better data than we've ever had before, so that, you know, we actually want to, you know, drive our programs based on the data that we have and where the problem areas would be. So
and the,
definitely moving
on,
that way.
On the injury rates, the these are submitted in compliance with the National Transportation Database, right? So yes, to some extent, there are comparables out there.
As far, yes, as yeah, far
to
as
to some extent.
Right, to yeah, some extent.
Some systems may be more or less honest, right? But we might look at it. More or less true. Any other questions on the safety report, the safety data? Okay. As we look forward, we don't have a police report this month unless Chief Taborn has something he wants to bring to our attention. We will have that at the next meeting. And I'd like to get onto the schedule, when you think it's appropriate, an update on how we're doing on safety culture issues, the steps that have been taken. We had the employee survey last year. We've instituted whistleblowing protection and the like. But I think it'd be useful when you think there's something to be said as to how we're doing on that, because ultimately we won't have a safe system until we have employees who are making it their duty to make it a safe system. Yes, Lawrence.
That prompts a question, Jim. Over the years, I did a lot of work many years ago with Toyota, and they're famous for their Kaizen system, where they get employees together to talk about how can we make things safer, how can we do things more effectively. Do we do anything like that with Metro employees, where they get together in groups and talk about how can we improve our system and make things safer for us as employees and for our passengers and whatnot?
Yes, sir. That is done through our local safety committee meetings, area safety committee meetings, departmental safety committee meetings, and the executive safety committee meeting, where issues are, if they're brought up, certainly it's desired that they are addressed at their local level. However, it can, you know, percolate up if it's an issue that's out of the you know, out of the realm of the local safety committee. Then if we have, you know, events also, we meet, or we call safety stand downs or meetings to discuss a specific incident, as well as our safety officers are field based to talk to employees, and employees are really, I believe, stepping up more and more and communicating with us, you know, some basic things that we're looking at, you know, going forward.
Yeah, on a positive note, I just wanted to make the board aware that last night we had a very successful public hearing for the construction of a new police station at the Franconia Springfield station, and the public was very receptive to the idea. It's something that's much needed for our transit police, and we've crossed a major hurdle last night by having the public hearing and having folks being very supportive of the project. So a bit of good news coming forward on that. Just wanted to make sure the board was aware of that.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments? If not, I'll call the Safety Committee meeting adjourned. We did it a little less than an hour.